RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Now a discussion about globalism, technocracy, the corruption of the left, and where we are all now, including the WHO's pandemic treaty. Much talk about that over the time here. Also the UN Pact for the Future and same. So how do we take back control? To talk about this with us on RCR is Jacob Nordengard, a Swedish researcher, author, lecturer, and musician. He has a PhD in technology and social change at Linköping University and Master of Social Science and Geography and Master of Social Science in Culture and Media Production. He's also the lead singer, songwriter of a doom metal band, Wardenclyffe. Lyrics are inspired by his research, and he joins us now all the way from Sweden. Jacob, welcome to our radio station. Thanks for coming on, making time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Finally, New Zealand.
Yeah, it's great to have you.
Yeah.
I want to read a few lines from a Substack of yours recently. The anti-globalism movement was strong in the mid-90s with a broad support from the radical left. Today, the activists from the left are the most likely to attack me, referring to you, obviously, and brand me as a right-wing extremist, climate denier, and conspiracy theorist for expressing essentially the same view I had in 1993. How did this happen? It's a very good question, Jacob. How did it happen?
Well, I tried to explain this in the Substack post, and and it's kind of, but it's been a journey, and it's like a lot of things happened after the Iraq war, I think. And at the time I started my university studies in as a PhD student, we had it was a lot of people at the university that were very left, anti-globalization. The big corporations were the bad guys and everything. And it slowly changed after this 2003. And it's like when the war against carbon dioxide was declared, A big part of the movement changed direction. And it could be a crucial thing. Climate change changed everything. And also, I was in the Green Party at that time.
Okay.
And the Green Party in Sweden, they changed from being skeptical to the European Union, and also because they thought that we need this cooperation with other countries to solve this climate problem. So they abandoned everything.
That prepared the ground then for what we know now as globalism.
Yeah.
That was that's actually a bit of a genius move, isn't it? If you're a globalist.
Yeah, it is. And it was genius. As I found out during my studies, being a first believer in this climate narrative and then starting investigating this as a geography student, I found out that it was very not much any proof for what they claim to be human involvement in climate change. And it kind of shocked me. I couldn't quite understand how when I investigated the proofs, how could this be? How could this? And now everybody's talking about this. This is the big thing. And in Sweden, it was huge at the time. And we also had the Al Gore movie, An Inconvenient Truth.
Yeah, I remember that.
And a lot of propaganda. So at that time, I started to investigate the background to the climate issue. First, the scientific facts, and found out that it was mostly based on models, not hard science.
It was quite an easy sell, though, to flip people so well. Do you think they were looking, people were looking for something to sort of anchor onto? There might be that mass formation phenomenon that the Netherlands Desmond. Fellow talks about. Again. Yeah. You know.
It's like it's very easy to. If you own the media, if you own all the stations, if you own more or less the politicians, it's not hard to convince the masses of these narratives.
You obviously have knowledge of pop culture, being in a rock band and having a music background. How much was there in culture as well that kind of hammered home this message? It's more than just a slightly persuasive argument on global warming and Al Gore, surely.
Well, yeah, of course, it's in the pop culture and everywhere, and especially, I mean, music has been a very important part of this, and that was one of the things that I've found out. It has been. I went back to more or less the 60s, and found out a lot of how music has been used to influence people's minds, and it was a lot of good music has been made during all these years, but it's fantastic and I loved it. Yeah,
some of the artists involved, I think of Laurel Canyon, you know, I've been reading a bit about that lately. I mean, some of the artists, incredibly talented, great music, but they were kind of also used as a messaging system to persuade people or to push people a particular way in thinking.
Yeah, yes, and because of these artists, they are the young people. They look up to them, and they are idols. And so, what they are saying and what they are come with kind of messages. They the young people. Okay, that's what I go for as well. So it's a very, very useful tool, and also be rebellions. Rebel against the system, stand up against the... I mean, that has been the thing with music, and that was one of the things when I started out as a teenager. It was always about the man and the bad boys in the system. The government I was raised during a time during the it was first the punk movement and also thrash metal and things in the 80s that was very, very against this wanted to rebel and I didn't understand this at the time, but this was actually more or less part of a greater plan and steering people in the direction. It's like we have these dichotomies, two sides of a game, and if you want to control the game, you use both sides and convince the left side that we're working against the system, but they actually helps the system.
Yeah, the system playing the two sides off, right?
Yeah.
I think you said also, maybe in that same Substack, that you looked upon in the mid-90s as the radical left, the young people, as kind of bored middle-class kids with not much to do, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was. And here in Sweden, a very rich country and one of the richest in the world during this time. So the kids, they came from this background, had food on the table. They had essentially nothing to fight against. But bored and easily manipulated, and because they want to have meaning in their lives and do something, and that's very, very easy to get these messages in these people.
I'm thinking about left and right. People on the left are very quick to label anyone who disagrees with them as, at least right, but usually far right, and now extreme right is coming into it a lot.
Yeah.
Yet there's never any talk of extreme left.
No.
There doesn't seem to be an extreme left anymore, but there's extreme everything else.
Yes, and we had an extreme left in the 70s, and we talked about it in the 80s as well. But now it's just shifted everything. And it's like the extreme left has become the new normal, more or less.
Yeah, that's right. But a lot of us don't want that. Now, I know Sweden is a member of the EU. Hasn't Sweden just joined NATO?
It was kind of a shock, but it was because of the Ukraine war. And we had a Swedish empire once. The Russians crushed the Swedish empire. And upon the ashes, they built the Russian empire.
Right.
So we have always had this with the Russians. Memories from the wars, the Great Nordic War that ended this period in Sweden's history, from a big power in Europe to be a very, very poor country until the late 19th century.
Hmm.
So when this happened. But it's kind of strange at the same time, because when I was doing my military service in the late 80s, we were a neutral country. We had a strong air force and army for kind of a small country.
You used to build your own jets.
Yes, we still do.
Yeah.
We are one of the
vegan,
few.
The vegan, yeah.
Vegan, and now it's Gripen.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so you've been able to look after yourself as a country, right?
Yes, but we knew at that time in the late 80s that the enemy is the Soviet Union. But when the Soviet Union just disappeared almost overnight,
where's the enemy gone?
The enemy was gone, and we took. Everything we had, our defense forces was just nothing left of, like many, many European countries did at the time. But this time, the next time with the Cold War, we tried to do it ourselves. But this time, we have no defenses when Russia attacked Ukraine. So Sweden just quickly applied to become members. But this had already been prepared.
Okay.
The interesting thing is that when we entered into the European Union in 1995, it was as a part of a kind of a deal, but it was never explained for the Swedish people. But the ones that are taking care of the defenses of the European Union is essentially NATO. Those who did the negotiations, they knew this. And also, the thing is that when Sweden entered NATO, our prime minister then said, now this time it's official. We have been very close cooperation with United States about defenses since 1954, but we couldn't tell you that at that time. But now we can do this. Still, we have had a close cooperation all the time, but now it has become official, and also we have. Oblige ourselves to spend a lot of money on our defense, and this is a bonanza for the defense industry, of course, as well. We have Saab that's manufacturing the fighter jets and also other products. We sell a lot of weapons to the world.
Okay, so it's an opportunity for sales, but also security, though Russia's never said anything about wanting to invade Sweden or any other country that I recall.
No, no. I think they are quite... we can't do that much. they are in Ukraine. We can't... why would they really attack Sweden? It has no value for them.
Because NATO and the EU, they're globalist institutions, really, aren't they?
Just yes,
the size of them for a start.
Yes, it is, and the European Union. Then it was became the union. Before it was the economic community, and it became the European Union in 1995. And the commissioner, right before this, he said that European Union it is a laboratory for a world government. This is how we will test this with cooperation between these countries.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like they also need, the European Union is in need of these conflicts. They are in need of these threats from outside because it's very, very different to hold this union together.
Also, you need to be in a constant threat state to keep it all together. What you say.
Yes, and because it's very, we have so many cultures in Europe with, and Germany and France, I mean, that's not an easy task to keep that together.
Speaking of globalist institutions, we reported quite heavily on the Summit of the Future not too long ago.
Yeah.
And when you break that down and see what that's all about, it's kind of freak out. Again, no reporting of it apart from our radio station here in New Zealand. So no one is even aware it's there. What does the Summit of the Future tell you?
I found out about this in early 22. And that's because the United Nations released a document called Our Common Agenda. Our Common Agenda. And,
yeah.
And they talked
no one asked
about
me.
It. Yeah. And they said this is the way of the future and for future cooperation. Because of all these emerging crises that are global in scale, and they talked about climate change, of course, and a lot of other, and this was issued during the pandemic, and
yeah,
and essentially the summit of the future and the pact for the future. What I saw it was creating a form of crisis management for the world with the United Nations taking their important place. It's like I see it as we are going into a period of more crisis and problems with we had Syria few days
yes.
ago,
wow.
And I think it will happen a lot of more things. So I see this as a preparation of for the times ahead. With because in the pact they didn't get this in the end, an emergency platform that will step up and could say that we need martial law. We have all these actors coming together to solve this crisis with all these big global organizations together with global corporations, essentially the WEF model, to solve a crisis that on one hand will give a lot of profit for those who can come in and try to solve it, but also furthering the global agenda, the centralization agenda, the technocratic agenda. in the end, this is a technocratic system to be able, and I describe this as a, what they want to achieve is this kind of a digital crystal ball, able to look into the future with because a big part of this pact is also the digital the global digital compact.
Yep, it's kind of like the architecture for a one world government. If you're going to put everything in place, have the machinery working, and because controlling people globally from a central point is not easy, so you've got to have these things. Would you agree with that? It is the kind of fundamental architecture to do that, isn't it?
Yes, and the pact is for the, I would say, the transition period.
To that point,
then we will have the governance structure ready. So they are working with it, and I wrote about this also in it's not in out in English yet, but a book called The Digital World Brain, where I explain the whole agenda, and it was very obvious when reading the background material. And also the all these organizations involved in this process with our common agenda and the summit, that they talked a lot about creating a kind of a world government. It's so they have the structure ready. They are and now we are trying to push it in. And have it ready as the old system will just crash and burn.
Yeah, and hey presto, here's a new system, all good to go.
Yeah,
except the WHO pandemic treaty is part of that. I mean, it's separate, but it is kind of a piece part of that as well, because that's how you control movement in the end, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and I have seen the WHO process as a lot of people has been talking about it. A lot of skeptics, critical people, has seen this as a threat to, and also trying to, and we know that they didn't succeed in May, but on the other hand, we had the summit of the future process that almost nobody talked about. So it's like, but it's of course it's the same thinking. It's a part of, if you go into this emergency platform thing, that talks about seven crises, and one of them is a pandemic, is the pandemic, of course. But we also have biological agents and outer space threats.
Yeah, alien attacks, yeah.
Yeah.
Might be seeing a few of those happening at the moment. See what's happening in the United States, New Jersey at the moment. One thing that, going back to the mid-90s again, one thing that was really hardly ever talked about was gender. Now, that's as hot, let's say, as climate change. What do you think happened there? How did that one come on the scene?
With the gender issue or the trans agenda, or
suddenly that was something, you know, and not too long ago hardly ever mentioned, so something's happened in a very short time there as well, very quickly.
Very quickly, and I was kind of surprised as well, because it came it seems like it came from out of nowhere, and also a push for a very, very extreme positions in this. And in that case, we always, as I have covered in my book, Rockefeller Controlling the Game, that comes out of all these activist groups but it's founded and funded by these big foundations, and also it comes in a package as well.
Right.
All these what I would label as very extremist left wing positions, but are so extreme today. But a lot of people from the left now also has left the left.
Yeah, have left the left. Yeah. So it all sort of mixes up into this great sort of, it's a vortex, really, isn't it? And it seems to be growing in intensity. What can be done, Jacob, to take back control? Our listeners are keen to hear.
I think a lot of things is already happening. Because if you do do such extreme things, it will be a reaction, and they can't contain this by labeling people as extremists, and so at one point it's too many people, so what I have been watching all these years that I've been in this investigating this, it's now almost 20 years ago that my journey started for real, and in the beginning I was very, very lonely in this, and especially at the university.
Oh wow, yeah, I can imagine what that was like. How did they treat you?
It was very, very, it was hard sometimes, and especially as I was defending my PhD thesis, because I was attacked from my former friends that were left because of my views about climate change, and because I said that, okay, your views are not really your views. They have been manufactured for you.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
By the same people that you don't say that you are your enemies.
Yeah.
And they did. And and it was those people that was most angry on me.
Yeah, because the alternative is to face up to the fact that you've been played, you've been had.
Yeah.
And that's hard to admit.
Yeah, it is. And it takes time. And I, as I write in my Substack article, it took time for me as well. It's, you have a certain mindset that has been implanted in you from very early on. So it takes time to understand, but it's, but as you get older, that's why these movements always need youth. And that's why they don't like the old people. And it's also when you think about it, it's the old people that they say now, they don't understand this. They are just conservatives, and they were the radicals in the late 60s and the 70s and the 80s. So
but a globalist movement with such, is it fair to say, sophistication? I think they're quite sophisticated.
Yeah, it is.
At what point do they give up? And does that point take us to the edge of something very dark? I guess that's the ultimate question.
Yes. I think, it could be very dark because of this. Because it's like when they feel that, okay, we can only try to prevent our own demise a couple of years, and they might try to. I see this as the thing with creating this digital controlled system. This is a way to try to manage this and manage people that are waking up and understanding. And but at the same time, when these people are trying to control it, they are exposing themselves even more. And more people start to question this. And if they get very angry and aggressive, it's just, I think the game is over at that time.
Yeah. Okay. And media is very important as well. I mean, there are media outlets like us. It's the writings that you do. But mainstream media is still, and I really don't like that term, but I mean, it's the only one that fits, is still either willfully ignoring globalist moves and intentions or is on board.
Yes. And that's what's happening with media. The last 30 years, and then with the media concentration, with independent press anymore. But on the other hand, we have the internet, and we have had this chance to and also connect globally. We can use the same system as they are trying to control us with, to actually talk to each other and support each other. So.
Well, I've detected a kind of a waking up in the big picture, but also locally where I am. How optimistic are you, or otherwise, for the future? Because if you're happy, I'll probably be happy. So be careful how you be careful what you say.
I am optimistic, actually, because as I said, a lot of things has happened. It started, it was very, very hard for me. The head of the Club of Rome tried to intervene and stop my PhD thesis from being approved.
Right to the top.
That was the top. But it backfired because it made people more interesting in
that always work. Happens. It always promotes it more. So, and,
and it's like a natural law. And as I see it, these people with this mindset, this kind of psychopathic mindset, they think they can be so smart.
Do you think sorry to jump in, but this has always fascinated me. Do you think that they think they're doing the right thing, though?
I think some of them. It's like we can create a much better system, and we don't have any feelings that intervene. We can make things perfect, and because of and they see other people not as perfect people. They are not perfect. Because have these human traits, but we are above that. We
superior.
Are better.
Superior.
Superior. Yeah.
And if it wasn't for us, those poor confused people would probably be going to nowhere anyway. So they're lucky. Yeah. They're lucky. They don't realize it right now, but they're lucky they have us. Is that what they're thinking? Probably.
Yeah.
The arrogance of that, though. That's so.
Yeah. That's arrogance, and they have hubris. They think they can also overcome death.
So that's at the core of it, isn't it? Actually, I think you've just got to the nub of it, the core of it, overcoming death.
Yes, but the transhumanist thought, and also overcoming the death of a system,
transitioning to another system, getting out of one system. And into another. Yeah.
When I wrote this, my Rockefeller Controlling the Game book, it was a lot of these people in these think tanks and organizations. They talked about how the Roman Empire had collapsed. It was not good. It was not good for the ruling elite. It took a long time to get back to where we were. But this time, we will succeed. Because we have a technology, everything.
Goes way back, doesn't it? Way back.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they have studied their own the empires of systems and how can we do it better this time? How can we overcome these things? How can we overcome death? Not just for the system, but ourselves as well.
Gosh. Yeah. Fascinating. Well, if you're optimistic, I'm going to be optimistic too. So thank you for that.
Yeah,
appreciate
we have
that.
To.
Yeah,
if we are just thinking, oh, they are so mighty.
Well, they do have guns. They have guns, but I guess we can get them too. But they have definitely have them.
But I think we have other things on our side that's outside of this material world.
Yeah, so. Good on our side.
Yeah.
Okay, that's maybe another conversation where that is. Thank you for coming on our radio station, Jacob Nordengard. It's been really interesting hearing what you've had to say.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And it's like when we're talking about information now and awareness spreading.
Exactly.
Now I finally to New Zealand. That's how far away I can come almost from Sweden. So now it's...
You can't go any further. You go to McMurdo Sound, Antarctica is about as far as you can go.
Yeah. Next thing will be the Mars colony of Elon Musk.
Well, I'd think I might consider that if I was offered.
Yeah.
But probably the same thing would eventually happen there because it might be the pattern of human...
Yeah.
Evolution, civilization, probably. Evolution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, Jacob, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.